We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
First pick in the 1991 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Larry Johnson from University.
I'm not supposed to be here, man. A lot of people from where I'm from, you know, don't make it.
Charlotte, we're back.
All right, everyone. Welcome to another BuzzBeat, a Charlotte Hornets podcast. This is Richie, and I'll be joined by co-host Lee and Brian here live on Twitter Spaces after we just finished watching the game against the Pacers. Before we hop into this recap, as always, we truly appreciate a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and or Spotify. I hope we don't pester you guys too much with that stuff, but one, we do really enjoy reading your thoughts on our podcast, and number two, it does help us get some more exposure for our podcast, get it out to more listeners. So let's set the table for this game, because heading into the game, the Pacers were without Sabonis, Brogdon, and Turner. Hornets were without McDaniels and then Hayward, who just recently entered health and safety protocols after having some issues with his foot. So this is something completely different. And the Hornets were coming off a pretty lackluster performance against the Raptors, but tonight was anything but lackluster in terms of the output that they had, especially in that second half. It was a really fun game tonight, guys, as the Hornets set a franchise record for points, scoring 158 points. And we had to look this up prior, but the Phoenix Suns back in 1990 had 173 points, which was the most amount of points in a regulation game. There were a couple of teams that actually scored more than that at 184 and 186, but both of those games went into multiple overtime games. So, Lee, Brian, how'd you guys enjoy this offensive output tonight? Very fun game.
Yeah, it was wild. It really was. This was a... Dell and Eric on the broadcast had to remind me in the waning seconds of this game that this was a 1-point game at halftime. And then just an eruption from the Hornets in the third quarter and certainly continuing into the fourth. But yeah, 24 three-pointers from Charlotte, which was ridiculous. 10 of 15 from deep alone for Kelly Oubre. I still think, you know, outside of this sort of random, fun, weirdness on offense of this game, like, it's hard for a team like Indiana to score 126 points and to lose by 32. Like, that's just insane. But I still think there's some, like, genuine, like, good stuff to extract from it. Early on, when this thing was a semi-competitive game, the downhill driving of Miles Bridges was really good early on. He probably would have been in line for an even bigger game tonight if not for some foul trouble that pushed him on the bench. But, man, just some awesome, awesome finishes getting downhill, either off the, you know, Bridges running pick and roll, or he and LaMelo doing that little two-man 21 action on the side, and you know, Bridges taking a switch down to the post. Like, that stuff's important for them, especially when the Hornets don't have Hayward. Like, Bridges being able to do that stuff. He normally does it But Hayward is the other sort of like matchup beater guy that you could do that with, like someone that can play both sides of the pick and roll. So good to see Miles get back and you know, get to it, have a nice game. I thought the third quarter for Charlotte, again, like just before things got like loopy and Kelly Oubre started just throwing in three-pointers from, you know, all over the great state of Indiana and everything just going in for him. But LaMelo getting downhill, James Bouknight getting downhill. And I thought the third quarter, like as Charlotte was really starting to like space the lead out, yes, the three-pointers were raining, but they just kept getting a piece of the paint every time they wanted it. And I know Indiana's down a lot of guys, but that's encouraging to see. We talk about it all the time with this team, the importance of them getting a piece of the paint, touching the paint, getting the rim. And you saw that with LaMelo. I thought Terry Rozier had a couple inspired drives tonight on his own. And, yeah, just a weird game, fun game. But I still, despite the sort of wackiness of it, I do think there's some genuine positive stuff to take out of it, because I thought you got some good play, like good transferable play from LaMelo, from Bridges, from Rozier, and maybe even like Cody Martin as well.
Yeah, couple things here. So Brian hit on some of Bridges like ISO dribble playmaking early in this game when it was still really competitive. And I know we've talked about this a lot, but it just kind of punched me in the face again in the second half, where it's just like the maturity and the development of Bridges with like the dribble combination moves that he puts together now that he couldn't even have dreamt of doing 2 seasons ago. I mean, it's just like in some ways his development has been very kind of steady. And in other ways, like in other specific ways, it feels like it's been like volatile to the upside, which is really cool to see. So yeah, I just kind of wanted to reiterate that point from BG. Offensive onslaught, obviously, like the Hornets offensive rating had actually kind of like quietly dipped a little bit over this past like 2 to 3 weeks. And to see it just kind of like completely get back on track in every way tonight was really fun. Pacers shooting 60% from the field at halftime, and they end up shooting 47% from the field. So like a decent defensive second half from the Hornets. And then kind of just wondered at some point to get y'all's thoughts on Bouknight, kind of working his way into this rotation, playing in the first quarter of the last 2 games. But I think we might be able to cover that a little bit later in the pod.
Yeah, let me kind of touch upon the Miles Bridges thing that you guys have talked about, and then we'll get to this speaker here in Twitter Spaces before we start talking about Bouknight as well. Lee, you're right in terms of his development, in terms of certain aspects of his game have been pretty steady, while others, it just seems like it's come onto the scene all of a sudden. And I think his driving ability this past season has just taken another like tremendous leap. And with his athleticism, with all that stuff, his power, he's combining his skill, the finesse, he knows when and where to attack. It just felt like in the first couple of seasons, like his handle wasn't that tight and he would get knocked off his path. But, you know, this season you're seeing the skill combined with everything that he has physically. And he's also finishing around the rim with some tough up and unders. And that one up and under in the first quarter was nasty in terms of like the English and the spin and the hang time that he has with that stuff. So I do want to get to the one speaker request here. Saul, what are your thoughts, bud?
I completely agree with all your thoughts on Miles Bridges, and I completely think that next step has already been made for him. But can we just appreciate that Kelly Oubre is ours?
Yeah, that dude is very, very much an up and down player in terms of what you're going to get from him night to night. And then tonight, shooting 10 of 15 from behind the arc, you know, we got that experience from Kelly Oubre tonight. And he has not been shooting the ball too well in the past couple of games. So to see him come out like this was not necessarily unexpected, because we have been accustomed to his up and down nature of his game. But yeah, he was huge for the Hornets tonight.
Yeah, and it's always great to have a guy like him, because if he's not shooting well, you just don't play him. So, but Bouknight was unbelievable athletically wise. He just looked longer and faster than a lot of those NBA players out there tonight. So I was really happy to see that as well.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The one thing I'll say too, we've discussed this a couple of times, but I think it's interesting to see, look, Kelly Oubre and Lauri Markkanen, any team in the league with cap space could have had those guys this offseason. They were the last two sort of like name free agents to go. The Hornets, it looked like, were maybe even in on Markkanen at one point in time. And they both actually come out and had nice seasons. You know, I think probably even surprising in some ways. Oubre, the spot-up shooting, the movement shooting. There's a couple of different ways Charlotte likes to feature that. There's that one handoff play they love to run out of horns with he and P.J. Washington frequently. But there's some other stuff that they can do. And just Oubre can get those threes outside of the scheme too without needing to like get into his like bat, like his dribble, right? It's just run the court, spot up, you know, fill the lane with LaMelo, spot up around pick and roll, the ball, you know, when Miles is driving in your, you know, weak side slot or corner, like be ready, get ready to relocate and get your the ball's coming your way. I think that's great that Kelly's been able to step into that role. And this is the part that I know I'm repeating, but I just think it's huge for Charlotte as they build this thing up with LaMelo, with Miles Bridges, with James Borrego, with this style of play, is you show this to other free agents. And, you know, big name free agent, you know, maybe at the event, you know, if the Hornets ever have cap space and have the ability to sign a, you know, the second or the third guy, you could show them this. Or if it's someone that they're you know, filling out the rotation with, they're trying to get one more person to add to the mix or whatever, and you can say, hey, even if you're not with us long term, come here for a season or two, right? You're gonna get your numbers, they're about to go up, and you can, you know, 24 months from now re-enter free agency, but you're gonna have more money offered for you because your offensive numbers are just gonna look better, or, you know, we'll find a trade for you that's gonna make sense, or like whatever that is. But I think like all of that is good for Charlotte. And I know as far as Book Knight goes, like, I don't, you know, the shooting numbers don't look great.
He's a flat shot, man.
Flat shot. And like as much as I have enjoyed seeing, again, including tonight, but I think even in the game, who did they play before Atlanta? What was the game before that? The Charlotte won before the Atlanta game. I can't remember now. Whatever took place on Friday.
OKC.
OKC, yeah. I thought that was another game that Book got downhill some. And I think that's encouraging. He's still, to me, I still get a little worried about him sort of like finishing like over length. Like I do think when he has his sort of like best moments getting downhill and getting to the rim, it's because like the center has been pulled away. Like, you know, PJ's got that guy, got the opposing five in the corner. And I just think there's still like a fair amount of like, you know, kind of like angled to the side of the rim, below the rim finishing by Book Knight. So, you know, he's not all the way there. But it is nice to see him like get into gaps, get into space. Like that handle looked a little bit loose early in the season. Maybe some modest improvements there. So that's great. The other thing that I saw with Book Knight tonight that I did like, I think he only finished with probably like 3 rebounds. I'm pretty sure in this game. But when the game was still competitive, I saw a concerted effort from James Book Knight to get on the glass to box out. He pulled down one tough rebound in traffic. Like battling, I think Bataze. In the second or third quarter.
On a play, Brian, where Indiana had already gotten an offensive rebound, and then he snared that and stopped the possession.
You could see him like make a calculation, or like, all right, I gotta go venture down in there, and he went in and grabbed the, you know, stole it out of there, and it was like, okay, that's a winning play. I thought
that was PJ Washington until Book Knight was the one that emerged like from that crowd. I was like, oh, that I know exactly the play you're talking about.
I thought that was a really encouraging play for Book Knight. And again, the shooting numbers, they don't look great, 4-14, but I think there were some nice flashes and, you know, hopefully something to continue to build on as he's going to get like without Hayward, without McDaniels, like there's more opportunities on the wing. Obviously he doesn't have the size or, you know, those guys or the defensive capabilities of McDaniels, but there are more reps available. And let's just hope to see, you know, him, James Book Knight, continue to progress because you know, he could be a nice piece late part of the season for Charlotte and certainly going forward into next season too.
And Lee, I know you brought Book Knight up, so I want to pass it back to you in terms of like what your thoughts are on him. And, you know, we saw it against Toronto last game, but his driving ability to me was on display again tonight in terms of just like his on the ball stuff. And he has the pumps, he has the hesitations, he has the handle. Just putting it all together is something that I've seen over the past couple of games in terms of getting to the rim. But what I think I've been most impressed with Book Knight, because it's so hard to judge when he's played these earlier games where he's coming in for garbage time. I don't put much stock into that type of stuff, good or bad, but I've been pretty impressed with him in terms of his assertiveness, in terms of like him not feeling that this moment's too big for him, because he's coming in, you know, in the first and second quarters of this game where they need to rely on him and his scoring. So I thought he felt a little bit more mature than I would have anticipated out of a guy that really hasn't had much play time outside of like garbage time here and there. So to Brian's point, with Hayward out, with McDaniels out, you're definitely going to need more guards and wings that are going to be stepping up and playing. And he's one guy that you're going to see. So I thought that his assertiveness and just kind of the moment not being too big for him, it was something that I was impressed with, Lee.
Yeah, I think this is something that BG even mentioned like early in the season, you know, when we were kind of trying to diagnose like, you know, are we concerned that James Book Knight isn't in this rotation, you know, 15 games into the year? And I think we were all honestly pretty level-headed on that. It was like, look, this is a team with a lot of talented guards and wings. From a lineup configuration standpoint, like besides the Ish Smith minutes that are kind of like spotty, like Borrego is just like very hesitant to put any lineups on the floor that don't at least include one of LaMelo or Rozier, and most of the time both of them. So like there's just limited kind of like margin for opportunity for Book Knight. But I agree with you, Richie. I have been kind of like pleasantly impressed and optimistic about some of his just kind of like presence on the floor. Like you mentioned, kind of the aggressiveness and some like a little bit of signs of on-ball maturity and downhill driving. I still get concerned with his shooting efficiency, which is something that I was worried about coming out. But like, and I don't need to like rehash kind of the theory behind Book Knight, you know, in transition as a hyper athlete with LaMelo and all these type of things that I think is a good theoretical fit. What will be interesting is when this cupboard is full again, and the entire complement of tools are back at Borrego's disposal, where does Book Knight fit into the rotation then? And the only other point I would make is, you know, because we are a little over halfway into the season, we can't know this for sure, but I have to imagine that Book Knight has been a lot better in practice too. Because he's clearly earned a chance and it's sticking at least for the moment, which is cool to see.
Yeah. Because some of these minutes he's getting early in games, even with guys out of the lineup, could easily go to, could go to Ish. Right.
Totally.
You know? So I think you're right. I think it probably speaks to the slow burn of bringing Book Knight on and making him more of a thing in the rotation, but also perhaps him behind the scenes playing better. Of course, getting some games underneath his belt with Greensboro doesn't hurt either. I do think, and Lee, you touched on this, you know, if and when Charlotte gets back to full strength, Hayward, Jalen McDaniels, the full complement of guards and wings, unless Book Knight like really, really turns it on, I don't see him being anything like, you know, he'll be mostly just like a spot guy. Right.
Right.
But you know, that's okay because it means everyone's healthy and they're still making a postseason push. Right. So like, that's the trade off.
And it's more effective depth and which is exactly. Already a strength of this team.
Exactly. And like, you know, it's one of those things where like the season we're deep into it, but there's going to be more stuff that pops up. So just knowing that you can maybe have Book Knight fill in some gaps, that certainly helps. And like, these are still just great reps for him to get in at this point of the season, like he's on a playoff team right now and currently getting rotation minutes for them. That stuff has value. And it's just, yeah, it's nice to see the, you know, your lottery pick going out there and not just like being gifted those minutes, but kind of like earning those minutes and justifying those minutes while he's on the court. A lot of work to be done, obviously, but I think at this point now it's okay to be, you know, optimistic or looking at it glass half full.
All right, guys, we have spent 20 minutes on this podcast and we have yet to talk about LaMelo Ball. In terms of like his triple double tonight, I feel like we've mentioned his name, but we really haven't dug deep on his game tonight. So he had 29 points, 13 assists, and he got a late rebound to get that 10th rebound for that triple double. And as I was watching this game and taking notes on him, obviously very effective game, but at times his impact felt very, I wouldn't say silent, but very just like steady in terms of, he was calculated in terms of when he inserted himself into the game. I think his third quarter was his biggest quarter, but like he was just filling every category, obviously, as you can see from the box score. And he was just a factor everywhere, whether it was like attacking offensive glass, he was distributing the ball, he was jumping passing lanes. And, you know, the biggest thing with LaMelo, and we know this, is he doesn't have to score for this team to be effective, especially if Kelly Oubre is knocking down 10 threes and other players are making their shots. He can just pick apart the defense and put those opponents on edge with his vision. And, you know, one thing that's always been tied to him and always been tied to Borrego is pushing the pace. And I thought Charlotte, especially early on in this first half, did a good job of come out and just had that sense of urgency, that energy. You know, it just helped with, you know, have the shots fall, get out. And I think that JB kind of lit, you know, a fire underneath them because of that performance in Toronto. And this is a trend that I've been monitoring, or we've been monitoring all season, has been the team pushing after made baskets, which is something that they did again tonight. And I think the last time I checked, they were still the fastest after makes and like top three or top five in efficiency. So, and, yes. And it's that type of stuff that also gives players like Cody Martin, for example, like he is a guy that, you know, for the most part, struggles more in the half court than he does in transition. Like, you can get him coming out running in lanes and just get the opponents moving. So I thought the Hornets at times did their best to push after makes, and, you know, they took advantage of the size advantage sometimes with the high lows and that 21 action that you were talking about with the post ups and just early offense to get in mismatches. And then last thing I'll mention on LaMelo before I pass it to you guys, and it's one thing that you mentioned, Lee, on the New Year's Resolutions podcast in terms of ball, and we want to see more of it from him, is one, getting into the lane, getting to the hoop. And this does two things. One, it could potentially obviously collapse the defense for open shooters, but it gives him the ability to draw fouls, which, you know, we've noted that he needs to do more of. And plus, he's an awesome free throw shooter, so you want him at the line as much as possible. And tonight, let me check here, he was 4-5 from the free throw line, which is a good sign.
Yeah, the one, just real quickly, the Bridges caught a lob dunk pass from LaMelo after a made basket. I think it was around like the six, seven minute mark of the first quarter. That was one of those possessions that happened so quickly. Like, LaMelo had the action ahead of the camera. You know, like, they had to like quickly transition from there's been a made bucket by the Pacers. The camera is sort of like sifting through the guys that are like moving from offense to defense. But before they could even get it down there, Bridges was flying in the air and about to throw down a dunk. And then the last thing I want to mention on LaMelo, and then Lee can hop in here, is there was this one stretch, because Richie, you talked about his rebounding, and this is something that Lee brought up when he and I did a pod last week. LaMelo, as an offensive rebounder and also getting his own shot, but he had that stretch in the second quarter tonight. I know you guys remember this, about 5 minutes left. And on the same possession, back to back, there was a missed shot. LaMelo goes up, offensive rebound opportunity, taps it out for a Rozier three. Rozier catch and shoot, miss. Another offensive rebound opportunity. LaMelo goes up, taps it with his other hand out to Kelly Oubre for another three. And that was incredible. I don't know how many people on earth could like do that or would think to do that, but it's just such a LaMelo play, because it's the offensive rebounding, it's the anticipation skills, it's his feel for the game, it's the passing, it's the unselfishness, it's just, it's the weirdness of it all. Like, it just, it exemplified so much about that guy's game. And then, of course, the rim pressure at times tonight was just so, so good. The one left-handed finish, I think Spencer clipped it and put it out on Twitter earlier. Just absolutely nasty body control and finishing from LaMelo. And then I just thought the shooting touch tonight was so good from deep and on and like in between pick and roll runners, either, you know, against, you know, Indiana's pick and roll defense or the zone or whatever, but just LaMelo getting into gaps and just like softly getting to that floater runner game of his. That's just so, so good.
Yeah. Ridiculous game from LaMelo. And I won't let my eyes roll back in the back of my head on a LaMelo rant tonight, because BG just laid it out there for us. But, you know, I will say, like, LaMelo is kind of quietly, like, his efficiency has dipped a little bit on the offensive side of the floor. Like, he's only shooting like 41% from the floor right now in the season. So it's just good to see him kind of have like a clean, professional, like solid shooting game tonight. Obviously another triple double. He seems to just be like, he came into the league being pretty good at this, but it seems like he's just getting better and better, splitting the pick and roll defenders when teams try and like kind of hard hedge on him. He kind of just throws it through the gap at times, or even does like his little kind of low crossover move. And then like the finishing at the rim stuff, I mean, man, it's like at times it's almost like he's like diving toward a pylon at like a football player. And he's almost like parallel to the ground, and he's so long, like particularly on the kind of like his left hand finishes. Yeah. Just ridiculous stuff. My last thought here that is kind of like LaMelo adjacent, but is more of a macro thought, is like, this just felt like a classic this season Hornets game, but like on steroids, because you get the LaMelo triple double, you get the LaMelo to Bridges half court alley oop in the first half, which has become like a fixture. You get another massive, huge third quarter, which has kind of been a running theme this year. And then you get this just firework offensive explosion game with like spotty defense at times. And yeah, it just encapsulates a whole season in one game, but like to the nth degree.
We even got a Plumlee reverse dunk too. I loved how I think it was Del Curry on the broadcast was like, he loves to do those reverse dunks. And it was like, yeah, we know. Been watching him play a lot of basketball this year. But I think that's a good point. It was the full LaMelo experience tonight. And
shout out really, Spencer.
Yeah, and really like I think that applies to Oubre tonight as well, mm-hmm. who like
the big Ubi.
The big Ubi. That is a nickname that we maybe need to – Eric Collins maybe needs to rethink that one. I mean, I enjoyed it in the moment. But yeah, I know we touched on Oubre, but holy smokes, man. 39 points off the bench. I think he broke his own record for most points off the bench by a Hornet. And, yeah, doing it on 18 shots. Just ridiculous stuff from Oubre tonight.
Yeah, I was mentioning it in the text thread with you guys. I wish they would have spread these points out over the past couple of games and not waste it all tonight. But we've got three speaker requests, and hopefully we can get to all of them before we wrap up. I think this is kind of a good place to wrap after these three. So, Maxton, we'll start with you because you raised your hand first. So what's your comment?
Hey, guys. Enjoy the podcast, first and foremost. Do y'all think that LaMelo was stressing or pressing because of the All-Star break and that's why he had such a bad stretch? Or was it just one of those kind of moments?
Yeah, I don't have a thought about that. I mean, it's hard to get inside the head of LaMelo in a situation like that in terms of pressing. I personally don't think it's anything like that. I think it's just, you know, from a game-to-game basis and over the course of a season, anyone can go through stretches where they go through lulls, ups and downs. I would not anticipate that LaMelo would be looking at, like, the All-Star break or the All-Star voting and sensing that, like, he needs to turn it on and do too much. So I don't know. It's hard for me to judge that type of question.
I do think, as I agree with what Richie said, I could also see, I think mostly it's just it's a long season, right? You know, stuff, weird stuff's going to just happen. But also, you know, no Hayward in recent games, right? And so there's a bit of a security blanket, like he's a matchup beater for the Hornets. He's an isolation guy. He's a good passer and shooter. And I just think he helps take some of the tougher defensive assignments away from LaMelo, which is like one of the reasons why one of the reasons why I like talked myself into the Hayward signing two Novembers ago. So I think that maybe that even has something to do with it. But yeah, I don't think he's pressing. That's a guy who's so confident that I just don't think it's something that he has to worry about all that much. But you never know. I mean, if you're 20 years old and you've got your first All-Star game within reach, like, you know, maybe you would, you know, like it's not like inconceivable, you know what I mean? I can't even imagine what would be going through my mind, but I think mostly it's like a, you know, lack of Hayward and just perhaps some weirdness over the span of a long season.
You think the lack of Hayward is a crucial thing here? Is he important to this team?
Is it, I've said this a couple of times now, but as it turns out, having a, you know, a 6'8" guy that can shoot and pass and post up and run pick and roll, like, yeah, it turns out those guys are, you know, even if they're not LeBron James, they're still pretty useful to have on the roster. So,
yeah, I was going to go on a rant about Hayward in this pod, but I decided against it. All right. Next speaker request is from Cam.
Hey, guys. Sorry, this might be a better end of the podcast quote, but I want to kind of segue into most improved. I know Miles is really putting up the numbers, but I think we need to give a big shout out to maybe Brian Geisinger here, who, you know, he called a national Duke basketball game on ESPN radio. Sports Channel 8, the podcast, is back, and the BuzzBeat podcast has taken off with a lot of, you know, recurring recurring guests and listeners like yours truly. I just want to give a big shout out to BG and Richie. Thanks for not going off on the Hayward stuff. I know that is a pet peeve of yours with a, you know, I love hearing all of my fellow listeners' thoughts on the Hornets, but sometimes they're just wrong. Okay, talk to y'all later.
Yeah, Brian, I was actually trying to listen to that Duke-Syracuse game. Even me, who doesn't like college basketball, was trying to tune in. I couldn't find it. I could not find the radio call anywhere online. I knew it was ESPN Radio, but like I was searching.
Yeah,
I didn't know if I
would have had to do the. It may have even been like blacked out down in Charlotte. You know what I mean?
Oh, it certainly was not, my friend. I synced that bad boy up on the ESPN app.
Okay.
So I didn't have to listen to our ESPN college basketball commentators. Again, sorry to derail, but
yeah, it was, dude, it was really cool getting to do that. I feel lucky to have had the opportunity to do it. Some weird stuff kind of pushed me in the direction of having that opportunity, but it was super cool. And hopefully not just a one-off. Hopefully I get to do some more of those games, but great time. And I don't know. Do you know, like, maybe all of you guys can understand this, you know, Lee and Richie, as you guys who are, you know, obsessed with basketball and write about it and talk about it a lot. It's like sometimes your family and friends don't quite get exactly what you do. Like they know that they're like, oh, you like basketball. That's cool. He does something adjacent with basketball. We don't quite know what he's doing, you know what I mean?
But it's, we don't, like, know, it's what doing, you know? Don't know what he's doing in there. We don't know what he's doing.
But when you do something that's like on ESPN proper, there were just a couple of family members that were like, "Oh, we get it now." Which was so that was like kind of cool as well.
Well, I just want to comfort the listeners and let them know, like, we've got Brian's bird rights. We've got him locked up for a couple of years. We can match any restricted free agent offer. So have no fear.
That's true. BuzzBeat has my loyalty. That is for sure. But I mean, like, this will sound like a joke, or maybe I hope it doesn't. But like. I mean, like, getting to do this is as much fun too, you know, like it's all in the same. So, yeah. But to Lee's also original point, or to Cam's original point, I should say, like, basketball season is like, it's just a busy time, as I'm sure it is for a lot of you guys too. But yeah, I'll rest when it's the springtime.
All right. We'll finish with Matt. So Matt, you get to finish the show off with your comment or question.
Yeah, just wanted to point out a couple things. One, they are 0-4 against, or 4-0 against the Pacers, right? So I think they exercised the demons pretty well how last season ended, losing to them like they did. But and just another, I mean, you brought up Oubre earlier, and he is the type of guy that, you know, every good to great team has. He's a starter coming off the bench, more or less. I mean, he has his off nights, but when it's on, it's something pretty incredible. And that's just another home run by Mitch Kupchak. And I'll be surprised if he doesn't get some run for executive of the year if his team keeps, you know, going. I mean, there's some other probably higher profile, you know, teams that will get that nod. But Kupchak has done it's incredible, especially after, you know, in the wake of Kemba. I really believe right now we're watching the beginning of what will be the greatest Hornets team ever.
Wow.
Ooh, I love that. And no, that's a great point, Matt. I mean, when you look at kind of like the Kupchak regime, like from a 20,000 foot view, I mean, like you can split some hairs, you can nitpick a little here and there, but like from a zoomed out perspective, this front office has kind of hit it out the park at every stop. This ties into a point BG made earlier in the podcast, where I think there is an argument to be made in the market that Charlotte can be an attractive kind of free agent destination, not necessarily for those top tier guys, but you look at kind of like the premier acquisitions, I guess. And, you know, Rozier came in a little bit of a different vehicle than an outright free agent signing, but Hayward and Oubre are both guys, along with Rozier, whose if you compare their value on the open market when they set foot in Charlotte, they are tremendously more valuable, in my opinion, after their time in Charlotte on this team. So, like, yeah, I think that's all a really good point, and just kind of wanted to loop back in that Brian point from earlier in the episode, because Matt brought up some good ones as well.
It just, we've talked all the time, even before, like, especially right around, like, as the Kemba was leaving town, the importance of the draft, not just like with Charlotte specifically, but like any smaller non-traditional market, right? But for the purposes of this podcast, we frame it around the Hornets. Like, that's the lifeblood. I'm not stating anything anyone here doesn't know already, but like, generally speaking, it's not like they've had a perfect draft resume the last 4 years. I think the second round of the 2020 draft is sort of like a bit of a head scratcher, but to draft Miles Bridges, PJ Washington, LaMelo Ball, you will see about James Booknight, JT Thor, like, not too bad. To get Cody Martin and Jalen McDaniels, Devontae Graham in the second round.
Exactly.
Like, pretty good. Pretty good. And
just like think, really like, good at the margins. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yep. And to find multiple rotation players in the second round, Cody Martin, Jalen McDaniels looks like, and of course, Devontae Graham. Don't want to get too far ahead here, but like, I think JT Thor is going to get there as well. Well, jury's still out on he and Kai Jones, but
hey, Kai hit a three tonight. Kai did.
He did. And some room. I just think there's reasons for encouragement with JT, as we've discussed probably, a couple weeks ago or so on here, but just they've done a nice job with the draft. They got some luck, obviously, with LaMelo. Not perfect, but I think overall they've done pretty well with the draft. And yeah, I mean, I will see if they are able to keep held on to the pick this year, and what they're able to do with some of their future draft capital. But I think that is encouraging, both with how this current roster is taking shape, but also with like future guys, they're going to try to build it up around LaMelo and Miles.
All high praise from Lee, from Brian, from Matt on Mitch Kupchak. The final point that I'll make with Mitch is just the fact that he had to navigate a team that was in contention with Kemba and they were pushing for the playoffs. And he transitioned that perfectly into a team that started to rebuild with some of the younger players. So it was a hard transition to make, because in the moment you did have to push for the playoffs. And in the moment you also had to develop some of the younger guys so that they would be ready to play, because they were going to start to get more minutes as the seasons progress. So that little transition there, I thought, was a pretty good one from Mitch Kupchak. So upcoming for the Hornets, they have the Lakers on Friday night and the Clippers on Sunday, which I believe is a day game. So back-to-back games against the LA teams. Thanks everyone for tuning in to another Twitter Spaces podcast. If you guys join late, the full podcast will be out tomorrow morning. So for Lee, for Brian, I'm Richie. Go Hornets.